London Column. This is Peter Watson once again presenting a weekly radio digest of items headlined or modest, but all selected for your interest and entertainment from the worldwide services of the BBC. London Column. This week, we want you to meet an American tourist not in London. We look in at an unexpected and informal ceremony at the Tower of London, and we'd like to give you a taste of the aristocrat of horse racing events, Royal Ascot. Royal Ascot, and it means what it says, since this is the King's Own race meeting, run from a royal household office in St. James's Palace, and held on royal lands not far from Windsor Castle. And there's no more beautiful and distinguished place in the world to lose one's shirt. There's really nothing to compare with the splendor of Ascot Week, when in leafy Berkshire the thousands turn up from house parties in the countryside around, or on easy day trips from London. Thousands who are interested in the horses, but who, with the fashion parade, have also come to see themselves, as our reporter Godfrey Talbot tells us.
Now, over on the far side of the course, the popular side, are the tents and the bookmakers and the thousands of bright-coloured dots, as they seem, and they are people, packed together, and behind them on Ascot Heath, the ranks of hundreds and hundreds of parked motor cars, a sign of unrationed petrol. And on this, the august side of the course, all around me and stretching far along on my right, are the lordly stands, the boxes, and the reserved club balconies, and the carpeted lifts up to the enclosures, the lawns, the flowers, the dining rooms of the fashionable and the famous, here on the racecourse. Here is Mayfair come to the country for its racing today. And here, crowded on this side also, are the seas of grey top hats, morning coats and pearl-grey waistcoats, and the gay frocks, beautiful flowered frocks, and the furs and the picture hats. All the folk who are here, fortified by chicken sandwiches, smoked salmon, champagne and cigars of the luncheon rooms. Off came those toppers, and the cheers swelled out when before the first race today, the traditional royal arrival came. The king and queen driving here with others of the royal family and their guests from their house party over at Windsor Castle there, driving right up the course itself, along the straight from the Golden Gates. An open carriage procession with outriders and postillions in scarlet and gold. A wonderful picture book scene of a social pageant of old England. In front of the stands they drove, and the bands played God Save the King, and everyone cheered, and you could see men waving their top hats and shouting hip, hip, hooray as the royal family went past. And then the racing on this wonderful clipped grass that looks vivid green and looks almost as immaculate as a billiard table. Not a perfect summer day like what we've been having, but fine and good enough for the display of all the female finery, of the wide white picture hats of braid and veils and feathers and ribbons and flowers that make the stands here look like flower gardens and occasionally make it hard to see the horses for the hats.
You see, but the horses are there, honest. Royal Ascot ought to be on the programme of every summer visitor to Britain who can make it. So let's take a look at this tourist season. Let's go, in fact, to Buckinghamshire, to Stoke Burgess, immortalised by the poet Gray in his elegy. Stoke Burgess, still and quiet, save for the moan of doves in immemorial elms and the murmuring of innumerable bees. And there, our roving reporter, MacDonald Hastings, talked with one of our summer visitors, Miss Ellie Whitmore of Denton, Texas.
Well, what have you seen now you've got here?
Well, we started out in Chester, England, and we just loved the walls of that old medieval city.
Well, Roman city, but older than medieval.
We just loved the city walls and the cathedral. It's such a picturesque place. I mean, you can't...
It's lovely.
You just can't believe anything would really look like that and be the real thing.
You saw the famous bridge where the Miller of Dee lived?
Yes, we did. We saw the swans on the Dee and...
Yes.
Saw the cathedral there.
Well, what happened after that? What else did you see?
We went down to Stratford-on-Avon, and we saw all the Shakespeare shrines there, and yes. Went to the Memorial
you
Theater.
You went to the Memorial Theater. What play did you see?
We saw Measure for Measure.
It was good, I believe, isn't it?
Oh, it was really wonderful.
A very strong cast this season.
Yes, and what's amazing, even the minor characters are so well cast. It's not just the stars, but everyone is just an expert.
Yes,
that's what's
yes.
really outstanding, and the staging is just so wonderful, too.
Well, what do you think about English now you've got here in the end? Are we as
well,
reserved as we're cracked up to be?
So far, I haven't seen it that way. He seems much very friendly. I'm really surprised. And the food really isn't as bad as we had anticipated either. The food really
isn't
good.
Bad. It's not. That's an English phrase, but it isn't too bad.
The austerity. You've heard about austerity on food, but it's really been very good.
I think that's been, certainly in recent months, the position has changed very radically. And what do you think of the cost of things over here? Does it compare favorably to prices in the States?
Oh, it's much more reasonable.
You think so?
Mm-hmm.
You mean you benefit from devaluation, that's what you mean?
Oh, we certainly do, absolutely.
Yes. And, well, now you've got here to this wonderful old place of Stoke Sturgis, I wonder whether you'd like to tell the folks back home in Denton what you can see.
Well, we see a very picturesque, lovely old church. We see a beautiful pathway with roses. We see the cemetery that we've heard about so often in the poem about the country churchyard. And we see the very tomb that Gray sat on when he composed those lines. And we also see the spot where Gray himself was buried, not to mention the lovely church.
Every tourist makes the Tower of London, ancient bastion where imprisonment and execution were once the order of the medieval day, where now the crown jewels find safe deposit, and where still the military prisoner on charge of treason may spend his anxious days before trial. But by a quirk of fate, I was in the Tower during the last war, not as a prisoner, but, much odder, as the luncheon guest of a prisoner, an officer under close arrest. Well, luncheon as the guest of a prisoner in the Tower of London at the height of war, too, that's one thing. And probably unique until the other day when medieval grimness was washed even further into limbo with a cocktail party at which our reporter Sheila Stewart was a guest. Tell us about it, Sheila.
Well, you know, Peter, I can't count the number of times I've been round the Tower, either as a child when it was considered part of my education, or since then when I've taken my American friends on a conducted tour. But I never thought I'd be asked to a cocktail party in that grim old fortress. And in case you're picturing me taking a glass of wine among the crown jewels, let me hasten to add that this party was given in the officers' mess of the Royal Fusiliers, the regiment whose job it is to guard the Tower. It was given to celebrate their return to their place of origin, and to return after quite a long absence, too. The regiment was raised in the Tower of London in 1685. Shortly after that, they went abroad to fight the foe, and when they returned, they found another regiment had moved in, and they were never able to oust those squatters until last year. So, you see, it was quite a cause for celebration. As you might expect in that setting, I find myself steeped in the traditions of that fine old regiment. For instance, on one table in the beautiful lofty room that's their mess was quite the largest silver cup I've ever seen. This was a gift of King William IV to commemorate an occasion when he dined in the Fusiliers' mess in Windsor. When they'd stood to drink his health, His Majesty said, "The loyalty of my beloved regiment of Fusiliers must never be called in question. From this day forth, you need never drink my health." And ever since that day, the Royal Fusiliers is the only regiment that doesn't drink the King's health. Apparently, though their loyalty was above question, their honesty was still a matter of surprise to the monarch, because when he left his favourite snuffbox on the mess table, and they returned it to him on his next visit, this gesture so touched him that he picked up a fork off the table and scratched inside the lid William R.I. and presented it to the regiment. And there it still is, and the faint scratching is still visible. When the party was over, a few of us stayed on for the ceremony of the key, the locking of the three great gates at 10 o'clock each night. As we waited in the fading light, the band played Abide With Me, and then the beefeater, holding his lantern, appeared with his escort of four Fusiliers, and the ancient ceremony that's taken place each night for over 700 years was reenacted. Halt, who goes there? The keys. Whose keys? King George's keys. Advance, King George's keys. All's well. The band played God Save the King, and then came the finale, the most beautiful arrangement, if I may use such a banal expression, of the Vesper hymn coupled to the last post. Very softly, that simple old tune that we all sang as children stole on the evening air. Now the day is over, night is drawing nigh. And then through it, and rising above it, the piercing sweetness of the bugle playing the last post.
Thank you.
now for our postscript from London columnist Alan Melville.
Alan, this is Alan Melville speaking. The lady from Texas who visited Stoke Poges has arrived in these shores at the start of our tourist season, and a few words of advice on how to behave as a tourist in Britain may not be out of place. Do not, I know you've been told this before, but it cannot be repeated too often, do not expect ice water in every hotel or on every restaurant table. Ours is a fickle climate, even in high summer, and the iceman cometh with far less regularity than he doth with you. The lifting of the price control of meals has gone to the heads of some of the ritzier restaurants, so for the next few months, until they get found out, always ask for the priced menu and never allow the head waiter to stand around making suggestions. You'll only find yourself landed with an escalope de veau a la Herbert Morrison, which will knock you back $4. If you visit Edinburgh, where their very excellent festival will be in its fourth year of success, don't go on at length about the beauties of Glasgow. I know this is unlikely, but the point is that when you visit Glasgow, don't go on at length about the beauties of Edinburgh. A deep and deadly rivalry exists between these two cities, and Glasgow at the moment is touchier than ever, mainly because she's still kicking herself for not having thought of the festival gag first. In visiting the London Zoo, do not say that you can't understand why the British public makes such a fuss about the baby polar bear Brumas, for such a remark will probably result in physical violence, and you'll almost certainly be asked to leave the country. At the moment, the affection of the British public for Brumas is exceeded only by its affection for the royal family, and you don't even have to pay to see the latter. Don't say that our national game of cricket somehow lacks the excitement of baseball. It does, but that kind of remark causes apoplexy among cricketing enthusiasts, and it undoes years of Anglo-American relations. Check up on arrival on our licensing hours, for it's laid down in the laws of the realm that you may quaff a lager beer, ice or otherwise, at certain hours of the day and night, but not at others. Neither over-tip nor under-tip. You'll wish, we presume, to be regarded neither as a sucker nor a leper. 10% is a safe tip for everything, and don't give the bellboys in the smart hotels more than a dollar. They get cocky, end up as hotel receptionists, and in 20 years' time may be refusing you accommodation. Get off the beaten track. Don't see only the obvious show places. Visit the villages, the shops up side streets, the lanes as well as the highways. Have a wonderful time. There's no reason why you shouldn't. In spite of all that we say about it, ours is a wonderful country. Goodbye.
And it's goodbye too from this edition of London Column, a radio digest produced by Stephen Eckard, presented by Peter Watson, and which came to you in the North American service of the BBC.
That was London Column, a transcribed program. This is the British Broadcasting Corporation.